Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth. Drama.
All right. First, I want to apologize to everybody for the technical difficulties there. welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Big Hunger, a.k.a. F the N-Word. I have my main man, Ryan Frazier of World of Black Heroes, representing the great country of Jamaica. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, man.
All right. Well, I know today we gonna talk black heroes, whatnot, but we gonna start with a favorite hero of both of ours, Black Panther.
Yes, sir. We will be talking about the Panther.
Now I want to ask you, and I guess this is for everybody else. Now we talk about Panther. The long history of the Panther. What is in your mind? What is the significance of Black Panther? Before you start, to you.
Okay, the significance of the Black Panther to me, first and foremost, has been the fact that he's the first Black superhero ever. I mean, there have been Black characters before him, like Gabe Jones from Howling Commandos, but he was literally the first Black superhero. So that's his first big significance. The other has to be he has the longest running series in terms of being a Black character, because roughly from around 1998 to now, there's always been a Black Panther comic on the stand. Hasn't been one complete ongoing. There's been Volume 2, Volume 3, Volume 4, Do More, and currently, you know, Man Without Fear. But the fact that he has consistently had an ongoing series is worthy of praise in my eyes.
Yeah. I'm with you there, and I also agree. I mean, Black Panther to me represented a whole lot. As a child, you know, there weren't a lot of Black heroes, and so just to be able to see myself, and then we talk about a character that actually was an African king with his own independent kingdom, I mean, it was even more appealing, I think.
Yeah, it was really mind-blowing that, you know, he was in fact, as you say, a Black king from Africa, because even by today's standards, Africa is still portrayed as the poor, filthy, uneducated place.
Yes.
So, to even think that, you know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby could think of something like this, even in those early days, because I think he made his debut in the 60s?
Yes.
Yeah, I do believe it was the 60s.
Yes, it was the 60s.
Yeah, man, that's huge.
Right. I mean, and we're talking about, I mean, he made his debut right in the middle of the civil rights movement here in the United States. So, I mean, it's even huger that they would create a character, a positive character, with the name. I mean, because a lot of people, when they think of Black Panther, they throw out the negative connotations that they have of the Black Panther movement that started here in Oakland and spread across the United States as gun-toting hooligans or whatnot, however they want to classify them.
True. And another thing about that, Black Panther is a superhero. He's always gone very contrary to public perception of, as you say, the Black Panther movement. He's more, sure, you know, he goes around kicking people's ass, but he's always a fight after type of guy. He's a talk first kind of guy.
Right. And I always admired the strategy, you know, where he always, at least went in some of his series, he always thought first, and that's where you talk about the talking and then, you know, getting into the fight. He always thought it out first before he got into any battle.
Yeah, and he's also unique in the combination of physical prowess and brain, because in comics, you usually, if you're the smart guy, you're not usually the guy who fights the best, except, of course, if you're Batman.
Right.
But everybody else, you're either one extreme or the other. Because I think right now, they classify the Black Panther, T'Challa, as being in the top 10 smartest people in the Marvel Universe. And in the same breath, clearly he's, you know, in the top 10 fighters in the Marvel Universe, if not in all of comics. Because he has managed to take on, what was his name, Iron Fist?
Yes, Iron Fist.
Yeah, he took on Iron Fist during the Priest run, I believe. And despite the fact that Iron Fist was trying to kill him, he was possessed, by the way. Yeah, he was trying to kill him, and he was on the defensive. He still managed to defeat him. And his father, he's noted as having more skill than his father, who had comparable skill to his grandfather, Azuri. And, of course, Azuri kicked Captain America's ass. So, in that context, you realize that he's both a world-class fighter as well as a world-class intellect.
Right. Now, talk to us about the runs as far as Black Panther. I know we've talked about Black Panther being on the stands consistently since the 80s. Talk about the runs in Black Panther lore that are definitive to you.
Okay, well, he's had an ongoing, not from the 80s, from around 98, because his ongoings really became consistent once Christopher Priest was handed the reins of Black Panther. And of course, we have to give big props, big shout out to Christopher Priest, because he was the first Black editor and writer at Marvel and DC. So big shout out to him. And, okay, in 1990, Black Panther is a relative unknown at this point, despite having debuted in 1966. Right before Priest is handed the reins, the Black Panther was involved in Fantastic Four. He was the financial backer of Fantastic Four, which I think ran from 94 to around 95. Correct. And of course, Christopher Priest, when he got the book, he took Black Panther in a whole different direction, because all of the stuff that came before was always kind of campy, let's be honest. It wasn't the type of situation that you could take very, very seriously with Wakanda and its technology and, you know, them having a king who happens to also be a superhero.
Right.
But took him and sent him to New York. And it was a very gritty, very realistic type of portrayal. He streamlined, you know, modern Black Panther mythology was created by Christopher Priest. He created the Dora Milaje, which are, they're all female group. They're the wives in training of the Black Panther. and that comes directly from African culture, where warring tribes, you know, to make peace with a more powerful tribe, would actually give him your daughter as a wife. Of course, for the Black Panther, it's more ceremonial than anything else. It keeps, you know, peace within all of the communities, because Wakanda itself is divided into the technologically advanced section where he lives, and of course you have the outer bands around that section, which are not as advanced. They live more like somewhere between modern day Africa and ancient Africa, around, you know, the Shaka Zulu era. They still carry their spears, they still fish, that type of thing. So this was his way of keeping everybody together, because if you choose a single wife from any of these tribes, then clearly, you know, other tribes are going to be offended by it.
Right. Now,
so, yeah?
Now, I was going to ask you, and I know what also set apart the priest run for me is, as you were saying, they fleshed out the Wakanda. I mean, because we never really had an in-depth look into Wakanda, you know, as a society, until we started getting into the priest run.
That's true. There was the series directly before that. I think it was Black Panther's Prey. They attempted to do really bad fleshing out of Wakanda there, because they ended up having these long halls that were holographic in nature. There's no way to put that fit into modern comics, to be honest. And I think Black Panther's Prey came out in 1991. But enough about them.
Yeah.
Back to Priest Run. Okay, apart from the Dora Milaje, he also created the Hatap Selassie, which is essentially the Wakandan secret service. These are the guys who do all of the dirty work. They are the assassins, they're the infiltrators. These are the go-to guys for all of your wet work. He also introduced the adopted son of T'Chaka as the father of the current Black Panther, T'Challa. And by introducing this adopted son, Hunter was white, by the way, he established that Wakandans in general are not racist. They don't look at things in terms of race. The color of one's skin is just a non-issue, unlike in the rest of the world. Because what he established early on is that T'Chaka and his wife didn't actually have kids initially, for whatever reason. And he adopted Hunter simply by virtue of finding this child abandoned. Everybody else, you know, they were like, dude, this kid looks completely different than us. How can he survive in this society? But it didn't matter to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He adopted the kid, trained him just like he was a prince, treated him like a prince, and then, of course, he gave him the job of training Hatap Selassie and establishing them. Of course, when the father died, that's T'Chaka, and T'Challa rose to power, he quickly did away with them. But, of course, we know, even people in modern America know, there's no way for a society to survive without, you know, having a wet work
set
up.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be realistic here. There are some things that you just have to bite the bullet, you just have to do it. Whether it's pretty, whether you can talk about it or not, this is just the way modern society works.
Well, I think ancient society worked the same way. It just, they didn't have an organizational name for it. They just...
They probably did. They don't did write about it in the history book.
Yeah, they just, we're going to send you guys, this legion, out on a campaign. Not to get off subject. but yeah, I think that there's a significance in having a secret a secret force that maintains order and sets the agenda for your country, and Black Panther would of course have that.
Definitely. The other thing that Priest established early on was the technology. That's something that was never really touched upon before. It was mentioned that, you know, their riches comes from having precious metal vibranium, but no one has ever gone into the detail of the properties of vibranium up until Christopher Priest. It was touched on in Force Work, where they did some experimentation and we ended up with the superhero Vibraxis.
Right.
It never really went anywhere. Priest, no, what he did, he streamlined the technology. And of course, he mixed that in with the more Batman-esque feel that he was going for in Black Panther. So we ended up with costumes that could stop bullets. They would deplete bullets of all the kinetic energy before it could actually hit you.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, and yeah, because let's face it, vibranium is a vibrational metal. Just for those who may not know exactly what vibranium is a vibrational metal. Depending on its use, it can absorb vibrations, that's one. It can absorb kinetic force. It can be used to enhance certain powers. Raw exposure to vibranium as it in its main raw form actually mutates humans into a demon-like form. And in theory, because this is one of the things that they've used in past Black Panther stories, the Wakandan mound, because of course vibranium in essence is a meteorite that fell to Earth and it crash landed in Wakanda. So they have a large deposit of it in what they classify as the vibranium mound. Now, inside this mound, in theory, if you set off a set of vibrations, you may be able to actually destroy either Africa, the continent of Africa, or essentially the world, just based off of vibrations alone. So what Priest did, he incorporated vibranium into everything from Wakanda. Simple things such as the costume, as I said, which depletes the bullets. So, of course, you can't be shot if you're wearing a vibranium weave costume. He also had, remember the shoes, Dick? Yeah, the shoes that could walk up the walls. That was a big thing during the Priest run as well.
Yes, it seems like it's something that kind of went away. But
we're
going to
get worse.
but we'll get to that a little bit later.
We'll come to that.
there were a lot of things that were innovative in the Priest run. I mean, as far as the costume update, the claws, the design, like you said, the vibranium suit that stopped the bullets and energy, you know, energy projection, and we know what Claw, we know the suit was definitely designed to stop Claw.
Definitely.
Who may be the cheesiest arch villain ever.
Claw is terrible. I hate slapping. I think Hudlin did a great job in reinventing Claw as something to actually be taken serious, the whole assassin thing that he put to it. I liked that, but Classic Claw, who is just sound being transmitted through this little metal object, I think cheesy as all hell.
Yeah.
I've never been able to take Claw seriously.
Yeah, I don't think anybody ever takes Claw seriously.
Yeah, he's just terrible.
Yeah,
and of course,
now,
I'm just thinking about Claw. Claw is this big, pink, glowing mass of
yeah, who's got synthesized boombox on his on his hand.
I think plastic claw is a relic of times past, and we should honestly just do away with him, because he's just too campy for modern comics, and especially the fact that Black Panther has done well. He's basically been established as a street level type of fighter, kind of like Batman. I think characters who play off that are better, as opposed to this guy who really just looks like he should be fighting maybe the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
He just seems really terrible. Mind you, a lot of the villains made back in the day are campy, and they need some form of, you know, reinvention. Claw takes the cake.
Yeah, well, him and Man-Ape.
Well, for Man-Ape, biggest problem is the name.
Yeah.
I mean, if you call this guy the White Gorilla, it would sell far more. But the Man-Ape, honestly. You wake up in the morning, you look in the mirror, you pound your chest, and you say, I am the Man-Ape.
Yeah.
That's just terrible.
That whole thing was, I just see Man Ape and I'm like, no. No,
well,
I mean, Man Ape and Claw, I'm like, yeah, if that's the best, then we need a reevaluation of.
I think the Black Panther needs to be less. I think that's a big problem. That's one of the main problems and main weaknesses I'm looking at in terms of from the priest run coming straight down. I think he needs an established villain. Someone who, kind of like when you think of Spider-Man, you think of the Green Goblin, or you think of the X-Men and you think Magneto, and you think Black Panther, honestly, is just not that A-list star villain who is your go-to guy for a good story.
Right. And I mean, I think also when you talk about an A-list villain, it would have to be a villain who won. I mean, they tried it with the whole Doctor Doom, but I wasn't feeling that direction, and I think Doctor Doom is not for Black Panther.
I actually disagree somewhat with that, because I think the use of, you know, Dr. Doom, I think it works far better than if you use any of his established villains. And I really don't see anybody else in current Marvel who you could have used to rival T'Challa, because T'Challa is one of the smartest men in the world. You need someone who is both brilliant and someone who can physically take him on. While T'Challa has, you know, the whole technological advantage, Doom is not just a tech whiz. He also has magic.
Right.
And of course, magic would give him a significant upper hand in terms of a physical fight with T'Challa. That is not something that you can necessarily gauge, because, you know, magic is a whole variety of stuff you can actually do. So I liked Dr. Doom as a villain. It's just that for everybody else, they had a problem, because come on, this is Dr. Doom. Fantastic Four beat him all the time. But what they don't get about a lot of the times, Dr. Doom is beaten. He's not beaten outrightly. He's beaten through the brain of, you know, Mr. Fantastic. Without him, you really couldn't defeat him. So I thought the battle of wits between the two worked really well. Execution, it left something to be desired, but apparently we can't have it all.
I'm not disagreeing with you that Dr. Doom isn't a great villain. What I disagree with is the fact that he's somebody else's arch nemesis.
Yes.
And that's where I have the problem. I'm like you. I think that Black Panther to be a character, he would have the arch villain that, you know, you're like, oh, he poses a threat, not only mentally, but physically also. And so, yeah, Doom fits it, but he's the Fantastic Four. You know,
yep.
I think that you would have to, I think maybe even creating an arch rival on the continent who wants for supremacy on the continent, that has designs of being, you know, the guy on the continent.
Well, actually one villain that Black Panther has who I think works every time they use it, and that's Eric Killmonger.
Right. That's what I was getting to.
Except
they didn't. And Killmonger, he was played up under Priest, but they don't inject him more. I think that he'd have been an even greater threat if he was running the nation like a Doom, and he built himself up to do more. I think he had that potential, but they just made him like, I want to beat Black Panther, and that's it. And then he just disappears when he loses.
Yeah, Eric Killmonger is one of the big mysteries in terms of Black Panther. As we've been saying, he needs an established villain. And the only person who works on his level and from Africa and someone who he has a long-started history with is Eric Killmonger. But they've never exactly executed him properly. Even in the Priest run, I don't think he was executed well. And in the Huddling run, again, he didn't get executed well. And that's the big problem. Eric's problem, as opposed to Dr. Doom, he used Dr. Doom. He's an already established act. You already know he's powerful. It's imposing to see him on any page, in any comic book. With Eric Killmonger, because they've always flailed around with the direction that they actually carry him in. He's never actually going to work in that same capacity. In Doom War, at the end of the Black Panther Volume 4 by Mayberry, I thought they were going to, you know, bring back Killmonger and have him ally with Dr. Doom in terms of taking over Wakanda or even getting the donation. That would have been a great lead into another series, but just never worked.
Yeah, I mean, but that would be my definitive point. I think that if you're a true villain mastermind, that you would have to elevate yourself where I'm not Doom's lackey. I'm Doom's lackey. And the whole, well, I want to conquer Wakanda, I would think that the smart move would be to take over the whole continent one at a time, and then you surround Wakanda. I'm just saying. I think that you want to elevate the character. You elevate their villains. I mean, you define, like you talked about Batman. He's defined by the Joker. I mean, you know, you look at Spider-Man, the Green Goblin. I mean, and that's what we're saying. Black Panther needs his defining villain, that one villain that's like a real problem. Like, oh my God, you know, that's brilliant what he's done. And I think that's where I have a problem with it, and the whole villains and how they are.
Yeah, that was a big problem. That is still a big problem for Black Panther, because even in Man Without Fear, he's currently battling, I believe, one of Spider-Man's villains.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. He's fighting Spider-Man villains. No, Black Panther needs Black Panther villains.
Well, the problem with villains is just going to be ever present until somebody picks up Killmonger, brushes him off, and tries again. Because there's nobody else. And the problem with using characters that belong to a particular book.
Now, there was a villain. I think it's during the Priest run. Also, Moreland?
Moreland wasn't in the Priest run. That was in the Hodlin Mayberry run.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm getting them mixed up. My bad.
Yeah, Moreland was a more recent addition, but he is actually a Spider-Man villain.
Okay. Oh,
it was used well in terms of the Black Panther, but that's just one of the follies, I guess, of being the Black Book.
Yeah.
Nobody knows your villain, so when you use somebody else's villain, you know, you get more media attention.
Yeah, I've gotten into Spider-Man, but not in depth. You know, once you get 4 or 5 books, I have to back away. So,
yeah, potentially it's just not going to work out.
Now we talked about the Priest run, getting back on that real quick. What signified like the high point of the Priest run? What part of the run for you?
The high point for me with the Priest run had to be his showdown with Malice, his version of Catwoman, I believe. Do you remember her?
Yeah,
I thought right up to that section just played beautifully off everything that he established from issue 1 right up to that point. Because Malice was introduced with him first issue. He's one of the Dora Milaje, he's loyal to him, and then, of course, he ends up kissing the 16-year-old girl. And then she literally goes batshit crazy. She becomes obsessive, tries to kill his girlfriend. She just goes crazy.
Well, yeah, that happens.
Yeah, I'm sure every Black man out there can relate.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, also, I think that was another point that I think was underused, and I think could have been pointed out a little bit more. We talk about the Priest run and how the dating and, you know, how he would technically have more groupies. I think that was another issue that could be played out a little bit better, fleshed out, because he is a king. And as you say, we talk about he's a king and he's a mental top 10 and a physical top 10. You think his appeal, I mean, especially in the American public, would be sky high. I would say he'd be 99.99999%
Yeah, that's true. But in Priest run, he kind of downplayed, you know, the wow factor of having, you know, T'Challa enter a room. That's something I think Hodlin did very well. Because with Hodlin, every time somebody saw Black Panther, it was just like, you know, how would you describe it? It was like seeing Michael Jackson, Elvis, Britney Spears in her peak, Madonna at her peak, rolled into one and thrown in a room. It was an always wow moment when Hodlin writes Black Panther. He got that. With Priest, though, what he did, he established T'Challa more as a gentleman, a very detached, highly intelligent, very attractive gentleman. It's weird, but women didn't exactly throw themselves at his feet, which is, as I said, weird.
Right. Exactly. He's an unattached king of one of the most technologically advanced countries in the world, and he wouldn't have proposals out the yin yang?
I mean, it would have made more sense for women to be, you know, screaming and throwing their jaws at him than, you know, just standing in the room and everybody just looking from a distance with her.
Exactly. And that's my point. And I agree with you. Hudlin did approach that aspect better. I mean, Priest's run was defined by the badass that Black Panther was, and how he had the drop on everybody, and he was two steps ahead because he's, of course, running a country that the majority of the world and fellow world conqueror leaders whatnot would want to, of course, exploit and take over.
True.
So he kind of had to have that, and that's why when you were talking about the wet works, his team, his secret team, and I like that part of the Priest run.
I did too. But that's another criticism. Well, that's one of the huge criticisms I have of Priest portrayal of T'Challa, because he went a very Batman-esque cool type of vibe. What happened is, your main character, you don't feel attached to him at all. He doesn't have any type of emotional resonance with the reader. It's cool to sit back and watch him do his thing, but he's not somebody you relate to. He's not somebody you feel for. That's why when, I think it was his ex-girlfriend who was at the time dating Everett Ross, was killed by Malice, it was just, you know, yeah, she's dead. So what? Next.
Yeah. Well,
his connection to T'Challa during that run really didn't give him any type of human qualities. They made him, you know, they put him on a pedestal, because that's weird. Because Peter Parker and even Captain America, yes, they are idols, but they're also people you can relate to. The relatability was not a plus in Priest's run.
Right. Well, I mean, that's why I said they made him the badass. But like you said, when you talked about his girl dying, and there wasn't that outreach. Like, you know, Peter Parker is defined by the Gwen Stacy murder.
Exactly.
They made him human, and you can see the human qualities, and people can relate to the loss of a loved one.
Exactly.
As opposed to, You didn't get that for Black Panther.
No, not during the Priest run. The Priest run for me became more emotional centered when he took Black Panther out of the equation and he introduced Casper Cole. Casper was somebody who you could relate to from the moment he was on the first page. And I think he came in around issue 50.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I think right now, before we get into that, it would be a good time for us to take a break. And we're going to take it back to Jamaica. This is my homie, Roz D, Jamaica.
Whoa! Greetings to Jamaica, the land of the wood and water, surrounded by the Caribbean Sea. It's for you and me. Check it.
Rasty from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Peter Tosh from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Bob Marley from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Me love sweet Jamaica. Best coffee from Jamaica.
Yeah.
The white one from Jamaica.
Yeah.
The best ganja from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Me love sweet Jamaica. Motto. How many we are one? The first people, the Awawak Indian. The British then come and take over the land. Plus then we got an empire we gang. So they make a deal, me say, to the motherland. They saw them just capture me, say, ah, black man. This part come to the Caribbean. The slave for the sugar plantation. Martha Cabby from Jamaica.
Yeah.
This man is from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Chafal Boga from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Buster Mankey come from Jamaica. The great culture from Jamaica,
yeah.
Emmanuel from Jamaica,
yeah.
Samsa from Jamaica,
yeah.
The best backside come from Jamaica.
Tourists go
me say tourists come. Tell you where them love and just the reggae jam down. The good sense in me and not the burning sun. I want everybody me say you want have fun. I listen reggae music to the maximum. I listen bass me up and it might be can done. And any time me come, me just a lyrics on me tongue. And any time me come, I say the good vibes a come. Come catch this, I wanna eat you just like a bomb. Rock the from Jamaica.
Yeah.
And you touch from Jamaica.
Yeah.
So Bob Marley from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Me just love sweet Jamaica.
Batman from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Sexy girl from Jamaica.
Yeah.
The bass bubbler from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Me just love sweet Jamaica.
Oh, what a beautiful place to be. You can wash off your heart with a coconut jelly. You have gone while mingle sex and sorry. Innocent and away you find OG. I don't swim and you can wash your natty. Eat some fried fish and you eat some bami. The national dish is all fish and aki. In and the money with some good soul city. Let's go bring the players that won't play listen to me.
Rasty from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Reggae music from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Bad Marley from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Me just love, me love sweet Jamaica. The best coffee from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Some white one from Jamaica.
Yeah.
The best ganja from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Me just love sweet Jamaica. Motto, time in every one. The first people, the Awawa Indian. The British then come and take over the land. Plus then we make out an empire gang. So they make a sale to the motherland. And they let them go capture me, say all black man. And this pass some to the Caribbean. To see up on the sugar plantation.
Reggae music from Jamaica.
Yeah.
The bass backside from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Marcus Gabby from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Sister and the music come from Jamaica.
Harbuckle from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Buster Manti from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Jamaica Manley from Jamaica.
Yeah.
And the B.O. we come from Jamaica.
Tourists come, it's a tourist come. Tell you where them love and dusty reggae jam down. You put send to me and the burning sun. Watch everybody, me say you want have fun. And it's the reggae music for the maximum. And I watch all the people that run come. Because
reggae music from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Jamal Marley from Jamaica.
Yeah.
All right, welcome back to Smooth Drama. That was Roz D. Jamaica. And we are back, and I am joined with my main man, Ryan Frazier of World of Black Heroes. Now,
yeah,
we were talking about Black Panther, and we start talking about his likability, whatnot. And I know we went through the Priest run, and now we focus on from the Priest run, like you said, something that Hudlin did right. Was the rock star aspect of Black Panther, where everybody's like, "Oh my God, it's the Black Panther!" You know, I enjoyed that. I thought that was a tad bit more realistic, and I think there's something that should really be emphasized more. I think that would bring the character out. I mean, in my humble opinion, just from what he represents as far as just as a guy, a king, whatnot, in the world where there's not a lot of quote-unquote kings, and we talking about African king also, that's intelligent, it should be played up more.
Definitely. Before we move on to the Casper Cole stint on the Black Panther book, let me throw some numbers at you real quickly.
Throw some numbers.
Okay. In terms of the sales peak during the Priest run, the first issue is the highest selling issue of right before, you know, we get to Casper Cole. It sold about 56,482 copies in its first week that it was up. That's the sales peak of Priest Run. Afterwards, the numbers fall right down to about 20, well, lowest, right before Casper comes in, it's about 19,336. So that was a low.
Yeah, but it's not horrible.
I don't think it's horrible either. As I said, you never know with these big companies. You don't know what it takes to actually, you know, keep a book on the shelf. All right, in terms of the likability that we're talking, Casper Cole was a far more relatable character. He was mixed. Well, technically he's black. You know, if you got a pint of black blood, you're black. He's a black Jewish guy. Because his mom is white, his dad is real black, he's from Africa. He's a second generation police officer who happens to now have, I think it's a Korean girl pregnant. I don't want to classify her as his girlfriend because
yeah,
that stint was interesting because of, you know, the real life drama that he brought to the situation. Because here's Casper, he's now living with this young lady who, let's be honest, he really didn't expect her to still be there. Her pregnancy is the reason why she's living in their house. And, you know, her parents have kicked her out. So he's just being a man about it. He doesn't seem like he's in love with her. He spends most of the series, you know, lusting after other women.
I mean, I didn't understand the whole Casper Cole part in Panther lore. It kind of lost my attention.
Okay, all right. Let me see if I can break down the Casper Cole section for you. Casper Cole was essentially a retelling of the Black Panther mythology in a modern context. Because a lot of the drama or the issues that T'Challa has with his own father, Casper has the same problems with his father. The only difference is, because of course, T'Challa's father was a king, someone he looked up to, who he idolized. Casper has the same thing with his father, but instead of his father dying, his father actually went to prison. And of course, his father is one of the pillars of the community, as it may be in New York. The drama now comes up for Casper. He's working in a department that has nothing but dirty cops. And him, of course, being the only legit cop there, he gets set up, his crew gets shot up. He manages to, you know, survive because he stole an abandoned Black Panther costume that was left with one of his friends. So, of course, the relatability is that he lives in a normal New York apartment. He can't pay his bills. His girl keeps getting on his nerves. His mother can't get any pension because, of course, her husband is locked up in prison. He was not, well, if you're locked up in that manner because I think it was drug possession, he really has a really hard life, and he's trying his best to make, you know, sense of his life. And of course, by getting the Black Panther costume, he tries to clean up the street. He tries to get rid of all the crooked cops.
Right.
And in the same breath, he's trying to also still toe the line of being a good guy, because during the cleaning up of the street, he comes into contact with a lot of money, which he could actually take, and I think he should have.
I do too.
Because he's such a goody two shoes, as the case may be.
Well,
take any of the money.
Yeah. Like, it's drug money. If you're going to do something good with it, better you do it than turn it into the so-called authority, who are just going to give themselves the money. But that's a whole nother story and subject for another.
So trust me, I think you should actually go back. Years have passed since, you know, the whole Casper Cole situation. I think you should go back and read that run, because Casper is a more likable guy. He's more relatable. And in later stories, we realize that the idealized vision he has of his father is really just in his mind, because his father really was, in fact, a criminal mastermind. He wasn't exactly faithful to his mother either. He had a half-brother. There are various things that could have come out of the Casper Cole situation that Marvel just shot down because of, yeah?
I wasn't against the Casper Cole character. I just thought that it didn't belong as a main feature in the Black Panther comic. I thought, okay, you got this guy, and maybe Panther sees what he does, gives him a modified suit where he's not the Panther, though. He's something different. And then you throw him into the universe and he does some street level whatnot, I'd be fine with that.
Actually, in the sense of that, that is exactly what happened. I just think, priest, for main readers like you who really want to hear about T'Challa, I think the Casper Cole storyline probably dragged on too long. I think that's the main thing. Casper does, in fact, eventually get a modified costume from T'Challa.
Right.
Just take, you know, probably more issues that he would have stuck around for.
He should have got two. The second one, you're meeting, and then if you want to flesh him out, you do a mini. And if there's interest, then you can expand that character. But I think the whole, and that was my only issue, was that, like you said, I followed the story. The story was okay, but I'm like, okay, it kept going. This is Black Panther. This is T'Challa, not Captain Cole. And that's my number one issue. That was all it is. It kept going. I don't know how long. I know it went on more than the two that it should have. And that's where I had the disconnect.
I think Casper came into Black Panther at issue 50, and I think the series was canceled at 61.
Right.
So
there's a direct correlation there. Casper Cole takes over, and people are like, what? And he kept going. And that's where I'm like, okay, one, two, and then three, four, five, six, seven, eight. I'm like, wait,
what?
I didn't. Right. I mean, because if you think about it, you do that in any other book where you have Spider-Man, and then all of a sudden there's a guy who takes up the suit. But Spider-Man never comes back. Not going to go over well.
Yeah, that's.
And I think that was the main issue there. And my only point of contention with the Priest run, as well as I did agree with you, he wasn't as personable as he could have been.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing I want to point out to modern Black Panther readers is, well, Hudlin gets a lot of flack online in terms of, they think he killed the Black Panther, he destroyed the mythology, he's the reason why the book was canceled. I want to point out that when Black Panther was canceled at the end, well, not even at the end of the Christopher Priest run, when Priest was announced as writer for Black Panther back in 1990. Those of us who were online had a page fit, because nowadays it's all about Hudlin and how bad he is. But back then, it was all about the Priest curse, and then I'll elaborate on what the Priest curse entailed back in the day. The Priest curse came about because it theorized that once you put Christopher Priest on a book, it's going to be canceled.
What?
And it came about because, yeah. Yep, before Black Panther, because a lot of guys don't even realize that before Black Panther, Christopher Priest had been put on Power Man and Iron Fist, Conan the Barbarian, The Ray, Hawkman, Justice League Task Force, Steel, and Zero. All got canceled. But that's where the Priest curse came from. Mm-hmm. It's critical acclaim. You know, it was on a lot of those books, but they still got canceled. Black Panther now was the book who seemed to have legs.
Right.
Longer than anybody thought it would. Even Priest himself on his website thought, at best, the Black Panther will go up to issue 12.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of times that was the expectation, but I think it had what we talk about, the dynamic duo. It had a great writer who did do his due diligence in establishing the character as a real top flight character, as well as it had dynamic art also.
Yes. Art is a big part of any book and taking it seriously. If you have bad art on a good story, the story suddenly becomes subpar because if the visuals can't carry its weight, then of course, you know, you fall short. All right, let's move on to the Hudlin Run, which was the resurge in Black Panther popularity. Because at its lowest, Christopher Priest sold about 15,732 issues at its lowest for Black Panther. That's the number it had when it was canceled. And that's the lowest number it ever had throughout the entire run. When Hudlin comes in now, issue number one falls short of issue number one for Christopher Priest, but it's a significant jump from the 15,000. Hudlin's first issue sells 50,490. He literally leads a resurge in interest for Black Panther.
Well, I mean, we know that there's an interest in it. It's just an interest in it being done right. And I know at that particular point in time, there were also rumors out there that there may be a Black Panther movie that would be attached, as well as they had announced the animated series, which at the Black panel at the San Diego Comic Con, which I attended at the time. So there was a lot of buzz for that. So I know that probably attributed to it.
I actually disagree with you there, because when issue one was launched, it was supposed to be a miniseries. The announcement of the cartoon came years after, because this is back in 2005, when it first launched. The biggest buzz around this time for Black Panther was that Reginald Hudlin, who was a big-time Hollywood director, was going to be writing. And it was supposed to be a 5-issue miniseries, simply entitled Who is the Black Panther? What the sales figures were so high was beyond, you know, Marvel's expectations that of those first 5 issues. Because at out of those 5 first issues, the lowest sales number is almost 40,000. So it's still a lot higher than what they expected. But most miniseries, they sell about 20,000 copies, maybe even 15,000. And that's pretty much it. But the resurgence that he had with those first 5 issues is what actually led to, you know, a series that was just supposed to last.
Well, right, but that was my point. They did advertise it also, and it didn't hurt that Hudlin had a name that people knew from his filmmaking days. So he kind of brought a mainstream appeal, like, oh, Reginald Hudlin is doing this book, and I think that helped. And like I said, they did advertise it. They did.
Yes, I think that's another thing that Hudlin's initial run had, as opposed to Priest. The Priest run, you really didn't get the type of publicity that Hudlin's run got. Because, as you said, Hublin was connected up the wazoo.
Right.
That is on places that normally don't even talk about comic books. But the fact that, you know, Reggie is on this is
right.
going to get publicity.
Right. I mean, and don't forget, they did package out the animated cartoon also. So, I mean, there was a street buzz to it. I'm not saying that it was as successful as it could have been, but they did throw some marketing behind it.
Yeah, that was actually, I think that's possibly the first time Marvel threw mainstream marketing behind the Black Panther for that first initial launch. Of course, you know, afterwards they kind of just expected it to run on its own and it got no publicity, but they, at least they tried with the first 5 issues.
Right. Yeah. And then it was all downhill from there.
Yep. For the Hudlin run, though, in terms of what is significant, he fleshed out Wakanda as a nation.
Yes.
The Priest run did a lot with the technology, but T'Challa wasn't in Wakanda majority at the time.
Exactly.
He was elsewhere. So Hudlin is the one who fleshed out modern-day Wakanda, because he actually put T'Challa in the throne and had him dealing with things in and around that city. He also streamlined the royal family. He introduced T'Challa's uncle, Cyan. He introduced T'Challa's little sister, Shuri. And he also fleshed out T'Challa's adopted mother. Well, not adopted mother, his stepmother.
Right.
Because his mother apparently had a child. Father married again to Ramonda, and Queen Ramonda had Shuri. So he fleshed out the royal family. And it's also important to note that during the Priest run, we saw where the king was killed, and we saw T'Challa rising to power. But of course, when the king died, T'Challa is a child. There's kind of this big gap in what happened to T'Challa after his father when he rises to power. Hudlin actually fills in those blanks by having him do a walkabout where he met Storm, fell in love.
Yeah, and I thought that part of the series went well.
I think so too.
Yeah, I like that. Once again, we talk about the personalization, and they show the whole lost love, and he's looking, and of course the pressure. We need an heir to the throne. I mean, he's up that age, and it's one of those, the royal family, we need an heir. And I think that the ball was dropped after that, because the focus went away from the Wakanda and creating a nation and the royal family and all the other things that family entails. A lot of that didn't get focused on like it should have.
I agree. Right up to the wedding, I really think the series, that was the highlight of the series.
Yes.
Right up until T'Challa and Storm got married is the better part of the Hudlin run.
Right.
But around that time, you had, as I said, Who is the Black Panther storyline. You had the tie-in with House of M, the X-Men line of books. They had about 3 issues.
Right.
The X-Men line of books. Mind you, those weren't very good stories, but the fact that T'Challa was now interacting with the rest of the Marvel Universe, kind of more, it put him in the public sphere, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, but it was realistic, even though, as you say, I agree that I didn't, the House of M storyline on the whole was
It was crap.
Yeah.
It's quite a moat. The Black Panther issue with House of M is the foreshadowing of him and Storm getting back together.
Exactly.
But everything else in that issue was crap.
Right.
I mean, you have Black Bolt screaming at Apocalypse and it kills him. That alone signifies madness. Because when Apocalypse debuted way back in the 80s, I mean, a scream from Black Bolt wouldn't do him a goddamn thing.
Right.
But let's not go there. Let's keep it on Black Panther.
but that's the whole point. I mean, and that's what we talk about, the difference between good writing and bad writing.
Yep.
When you have characters that all of a sudden they're established one way and then they go a totally opposite direction and are downgraded mentally and physically.
I think the problem with a lot of these villains and even heroes, Marvel tends to, you know, assign a writer to a book. I mean, people get called writers, you might read somebody's book, you like it, you call them, you offer them to write on a particular type. They are coming into something on which they have no prior knowledge. And I think research is a key part of being a writer on Marvel. Because as we're pointing out, if you're going to be allowed to write Apocalypse, you should basically know what he's capable of. You shouldn't be allowed to put him in a story where it's just ridiculous. Just like you shouldn't be allowed to put Storm or T'Challa or anybody else in any story that is just mind-blowingly stupid. I mean, it makes you, the writer, look bad. And it makes the company look bad.
Well, I think where the disconnect is. I think a lot of these writers, they just think that's my story and that it is good. I think if you don't have a writer who is invested in the character, actually digs the character, that can take away from said character. And
that's true.
And we know that that's happened to Black Panther. And, you know, as the guy who runs World of Black Heroes, you know that's happened to a lot of Black characters.
Yep, happened to a lot of them. Yeah. I mean, up to recently, I believe, Aegis was killed. I mean, I think his real name is Trey Collins. He was in the New Warriors. He has a force field. He was killed in Hercules recently for... Oh, crap. It's just another one of those ridiculous deaths.
Yeah. And
worse than him was the death of Dr. Voodoo.
I'm still mad behind that one.
We're both mad at that one. I haven't picked up an issue of New Avengers since they killed him.
Yeah, they establish him, and he's due to Dominion. He's a great character, and then all of a sudden, he's gone.
The problem for me with how they portrayed Voodoo is that he was supposed to be more powerful than the person before him. He was supposed to be more powerful than Doctor Strange. Mind you, he didn't have the same amount of experience, but he should have had more power.
I think I would disagree with you, because this is not a character that was created like last year. I mean, we say Dr. Voodoo has been around for how long? I mean, he's been practicing for a while. So it's like, you know, it was a natural progression. It's not like he was like a teenager like the Wiccan. This is a guy who's been doing his craft for a while now. So I think that's where I had the real problem, to say, okay, he's not as powerful. Why not? Why is he not as experienced? He's been around for a while. He didn't just appear on the scene. He's not a teenager. This is a grown, fully developed man, been practicing his craft for a long time in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, but in Marvel, Voodoo is treated differently than mainstream magic.
And that's where that's why we have disconnect once again. Magic is magic.
Yep, that's the way I see it too. And another reason why he should have been more powerful than his predecessor, Doctor Strange had been practicing a particular type of magic his entire life. Voodoo had been practicing both, because, of course, to be successor, he had to do all of the magical items from Dr. Strange. And in addition to that, he was also the most powerful voodoo practitioner in Marvel.
Exactly.
So he now had both mantles.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was supposed to be.
Right. Well, I mean, but that's the whole point. When we argue a point, it's like, okay, he's got the best of both worlds, but he's the lesser. I mean, and it goes back to the whole downgrading voodoo because it's practiced by Africans.
Black people.
I mean, come on. No, that is where I had the serious problem, and still do, and I'm just so upset by that. Sort of like we talk about character Rage, who should have been renamed a long time ago. I don't see somebody. Yeah, my name is Rage. That's so uncool of a name. You can't get much worse than
that. The worst part about Rage's name is that he's a character who hardly ever gets angry. He's never raged.
I thought that we all black men were angry. Isn't that what the stereotype is? The angry black man? I thought that was just par for the course, according to what society says about it. So,
unless you're a character named Rage, and then you're the calmest black man ever.
Yeah, no, he must smoke a lot of weed. Rage has his medicinal card, and he never gets angry.
Clear.
I mean, because technically, Rage is like the Hulk, where we say the matter he gets, the more powerful he gets.
In theory. Back in the day, that worked, but nowadays, he hasn't been angry for probably the last 10 years.
And he's got the best weed in the business. I keep saying it. You know, whatever he's smoking, it is top shelf.
Top shelf, man. It's probably the good stuff from Jamaica.
he may be one of the more stereotypical and unused. I mean, because you think that if ever there was a character who would have been good in the Young Avengers, it would have been he.
Yep, having had already been on the mainstream Avengers team.
Yeah, but you know, you have a character like Patriot, who I thought they started off strong with him, but when they went the drug route with him, like he wasn't really strong because of his grandfather's genes. He was strong because he was taking the drug. I was immediately crushed by that.
Another black man on crack.
Yes.
Yep, that was disappointing. Even though he's gotten over that, but at the time, it really was a hard pill to swallow because I thought he was one of the cooler people in the group.
Yeah. He was.
And but you know, that's just how it goes in mainstream. You have to give and take.
And, I mean, but I'm of the opinion, how much do we have to give?
It's never enough, man. It's never enough.
Yeah, and so now we focus on other characters. Like, there's a character right now that I'm at a loss. Blue Marvel.
Yeah, Blue Marvel, created by Kevin Grievous of Underworld fame. Yeah. He's not going anywhere, I can tell you that now. The fact that he's on the same strength level, power level, well, yeah, let's use power level. That's my Dragon Ball Z reference. He's on the same power level as Sentry and Icon and Superman.
Right.
Marvel hasn't done anything with him.
Zero.
Nothing.
Yeah, at a time where they supposedly need every powerhouse that they can get, can use, he's a character that's missing in action when the world is at stake. I've never understood why powerful characters would just disappear off the scene, and I mean, especially a Blue Marvel, when the past couple, you know, how they have these giant events, and you would think that with the whole, I'm trying, what was that, the Asgardian War that they had, when Sentry took down Asgard.
Yeah, that was Siege.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't Blue Marvel be there for Siege?
Yeah, just like he's not here now for Fear itself.
Right. And to think, I mean, because Captain America is the top cop, whatnot, and he's bringing in all these guys with powers to help. Why wouldn't he tap a guy who's worked with the government for the government?
Because he's black, dude. I mean, think about this. They have.
But technically, how many black partners has Captain America had? I mean, does he not relate to black men now?
Well, clearly he doesn't. maybe they're saving him for the final issue of Fear Itself. He's going to be Captain America's ace in the hole.
Yeah, I guess, but somehow I don't see it.
Yeah, it's not gonna happen. Not unless Marvel listens to this.
Yeah, I doubt that also. But I think there's so many characters.
The problem with Marvel right now is a lot of the people doing the writing, they are not aware of the powerhouses outside of, you know, The Thing and Hulk and, you know, Juggernaut. People who've been around a long time. I would actually argue that a lot of the modern writers, they have no idea who the hell Blue Marvel is. Because he's only appeared in his miniseries and one issue of Age of Heroes. So he's probably appeared in maybe 6, 7, tops maybe 10 issues. Nobody knows who the hell he is.
Right. And I think that's the problem. And I think industry-wise, when you talk about, I'm an editor, I don't understand why you can leave powerhouses and how you can have writers. I mean, I would suggest it. I mean, I wouldn't tell you how to write your story, but I would say, you know, there are these characters that are out there that are unused that could be used, and it could help a story out.
Sure.
I mean, I just thought, like, case in point, the whole Reginald Hudlin, the Doom War. Why wouldn't I have Blue Marvel? He'd have been the first guy I call.
Sure.
Yeah, he's my ace in the hole. I don't think Doom would have prepared for that.
Yeah, that would have been an interesting twist.
Right. I mean, but see, that's the thing. We don't get that interesting twist. I mean, and I'll focus on DC. I mean, DC got the rights to the milestone characters, and you have some good characters. We know they use Static Shock. But you had the Blood Syndicate. I mean, you can go both ways with them, as well as you have Icon and Rocket and Hardware. Maybe you don't put them all in the book, But you can have them. You can throw them on a team. I don't know why you wouldn't throw him on the team or have hardware. Would he not be in direct competition with Batman, per se, as businessmen?
It's never going to happen because remember that the milestone characters are still partly creator-owned. So DC has to basically pay the people who made the characters every time they use them. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that a lot of major companies like to do. Once you give them the right to your characters, they'll throw them everywhere because they don't need to pay you. But the milestone characters, having to pay royalty every time you use a character, they're never going to become mainstream in DC. And they're never going to be used as much.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's another unfortunate that you'll have great characters underused. I mean, and that we're talking about Milestone. Now we get back to Marvel. There's no excuse.
Well,
I mean Blue Marvel. I mean, is he one of them characters that Marvel does not own? I mean, Marvel
no,
created.
Marvel owns Blue Marvel.
Right.
Marvel owns Blue Marvel. Cool.
Right. And so. He's a character who should be used. He should be a guy who can come in. And he's a Thor level character. He should be in Fear Itself. He should show up and he helps sway the tide of the battle. I mean, it just there's logic there. There's things that make sense in that aspect of the storytelling that we're not being allowed to see.
Yeah, there are a lot of stories where black characters could have really been introduced and used in sensible ways. But I don't know. In Marvel recently, I really see black characters getting the shaft. Have you seen, what is it? I think there's a preview for the Captain America 4. And it has U.S. Agent, American Dream, Commander A, Captain America. It has, like, all the white Captain Americas. There's no Patriot. There's no Isaiah Bradley. All of the black dudes are just not invited to the party.
Well, I think, what was his name?
Ridiculous.
Battlestar. That was the guy who couldn't read. Battlestar. I told you, he did make an appearance in a comic this past month. He was in that Marvel Zombies Supreme, Spider Supreme, where he had like 4 panels. So,
that's a lot of panels right there.
Right. Well, I mean, but that's my point. I get what you're saying, the whole USA agent. I have no love for any of those characters. I've never really cared too much for Captain America books, per se. They kind of old and stale in how they portrayed character. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Because there's that whole, and this getting off subject here, but there's that whole, he's wholesome how America supposedly used to be when we know it was never wholesome. You know, the good old days is talking about the height of Jim Crow. So I see the height of Jim Crow as the good old days. I see the good old days as where we're living now, where we have access and you and I can debate publicly, internationally, the merits of black characters without fear of persecution.
Hallelujah.
So anybody listening out there, these are the good old days. We talking about the golden age of anything? This is it. This is it. I don't know if it's going to get any better or worse in the future, but for right now, if we talk about historically where we've been, I mean, you might even can argue maybe the height of the height of Kemet civilization, the beginning of building of the pyramids and whatnot. But after that, it's a steep decline. But once again, we are going off course. Now, independently, because I know we focus on Black Panther and we talk about major companies. Independently, is there any heroes out there that catch your eye?
Yeah, there are three current independents that I'm looking at and I'm collecting. One is The Dread and the Life by Nicholas Da Silva. It stars Drew McIntosh. He's a Rastafarian from Jamaica.
Okay.
And there's Lucius Hammer.
Right.
From Ravenhammer Comics. And there's Hotshot. Oh, man, I can't remember who does Hotshot.
Well, I was going to tell you, and I was going to suggest to you, I don't know if you've heard it. There's another independent by my man N. Stephen Harris, The Fringe. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, I'm not familiar with that one. I'm gonna
you might want to check out The Fringe. It's by my man N. Stephen Harris. He's worked for Marvel. He's worked for DC, and now he's an independent. It's about a revolutionary group called The Fringe, and they're fighting to take society back from big corporations.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty good story. And the corporations have created superpowered individuals. One who was actually working with the Fringe, they've taken her and given her power. And they want her to take out the Fringe. So it's been a great story so far. And
how many issues currently out on that one?
I believe 3.
Okay. Which year did it start?
I believe it started last year.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that one out.
Yes, you have to check it out. It's pretty good. In Stephen Harris, he does great art.
Okay, because that's one of the main problems I have with independent comics. Because I know it costs a lot.
Yeah.
Trust me, if you are drawing and you're in high school, dude, stick to it. You can make a lot of money in the comic book game. So that's a big problem for independents for me. Because if the visuals can't carry it end of the bargain, then.
Right. Well,
I really can't stick around.
No, I'm big on the art. I mean, I when I came up, my favorite artists were artists like George Perez and Pablo Marcos, guys like that who did clean, muscular but realistic art.
Yeah.
You know, I've always loved him. It was one of my pleasures to actually meet Mr. Perez at Comic-Con a couple of years back. But
wait a minute. Didn't Perez draw Avengers Volume 3?
Yeah, he started his run.
I'm quite familiar with his work. I love his art.
Yeah.
He has a nice distinctive feel for each character.
Right.
I think he draws the Scarlet Witch is how I actually pictured her. Because
yes.
She has, you know, the Asian features.
Yes.
Well, not Asian, the European features.
Right. Yeah, he does all his characters justice. I mean, I have everything pretty much that he's done. He's great with the team books.
Yeah, he does great with team books. Because drawing a team is I was going to say it's an art, but we are talking about art, so that's a bad review. Having everyone in your team look distinctive.
Right, and that was his point, and that's why I loved his art.
Yeah, he's big on that. I love that about him as well, because a lot of modern day artists, they have a generic way of drawing, and without the colors to differentiate your character, you really don't know who the hell is on the page.
Right, and also the facial. And the body language of each character, I think that's important also. And I know that was part of what you're talking about when we talked about the independence and how the art, the visual, as you say, doesn't stand up to the story. I think that's very important. And I think overall, that's one of the reasons why, like we talked about it, personally, Blade has always failed because they may have great stories, but the visual did not stand the test of the eye. I mean, I looked at the comic, you'll see the gorgeous covers, and I opened up the book and like, come on. Stop.
Yes. Someone pooped on the page and smeared it everywhere. I mean, let's be honest here. Blade comics, they look like crap.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
They seriously look like
crap. Well, I mean, being that I remember when Blade was first created, making his premiere in Tomb of Dracula, and being...
The green with the green vest.
Yes.
Big-ass.
And those old school Air Force pants. World War One Air Force pants. Yeah. thank God for Wesley Snipes.
Praise the Lord for Wesley Snipes, man.
Because without him reinventing Blade goes down as the worst dressed Black hero, and I won't even say black hero. I'll say he's the worst dressed hero ever.
Yep. Worst dressed hero ever. Period.
I mean, his original costume was way past horrid. I mean, horrid is like cursing us out, like, nah, you can't associate that costume with me.
You can't blame me for that shit.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So so now we're in 2011. Where do you see as far as black heroes? Where do you see us going as far as accurate portrayals? You think that it gets better? You think that it gets marginalized and worse going forward?
I actually think it's gotten worse. Strange enough, it has progressively gotten worse, especially recently, because Marvel leads in terms of having a quantity of black characters, and of course, using them, but DC has quite a few, but kind of underused, you know, stick them on a team, they're the token black, and that's pretty much it. In modern Marvel, it's hell. It literally is hell, because if you look at X-Men, which is normally your go-to spot for, you know, any type of, man, I don't even know how to classify it, because what we've done in X-Men recently to the black characters has just turned me off from X-Men completely.
Well,
you want to lose my interest, say X-Men.
Seriously. As you say, is the... We're talking about the tokenism.
Yeah.
You have the one guy, he gets his three scenes, and that's it.
Well, the problem for me with X-Men is Storm. Storm is huge. Storm is the most popular black superhero in the world, bar none. She's been in every X-Men video game. She's been in countless TV appearances. cartoons, movies. She's everywhere. And if you look at her in any X-Men book recently, you will want to gouge your eyes out. She's been turned into this shell of her former self. I think if Chris Claremont sees what they've done with her, he'd probably die on the spot.
Yeah. I'm sure he's looked, and he probably already has had a stroke or two. Like, this is not what I created.
No, because, all right, back when Grant Morrison came on to X-Men, Claremont was the writer right preceding him, and he made a distinction of saying, okay, fine, Grant is coming on, these are the characters I want. And he took Storm, took Rogue. You know, he has a set of characters who he does magic with. And I'd much rather them simply send Storm so that she's off in Wakanda just sitting there doing not a goddamn thing. But do not do this to the character. Because it's just so ridiculous. Storm has led the X-Men for since forever. And the big thing right now in the X-Men line of books is, I think, Schism, which is basically a split in the ranks. And a bunch of them are going to be following Wolverine, and a bunch are going to be following Cyclops. And nobody at any point raises a flag. Storm just sits there on the sidelines. She no longer has an opinion. That, you know, we could be doing something else. There's a third option. She's just there.
Well,
and rather than just kill her than simply do that.
Well, I mean, one, Wolverine probably next to Spider-Man is overexposed, so I don't even understand the whole...
You are hitting the nail on the bloody head. I'm not annoyed by anybody in comics as much as Wolverine. I swear, if I got my hands on Marvel, if I got the top job, I'd drop every Wolverine book, the 50 million of them.
Well,
I'm so tired of that little midget.
Yeah.
I'm tired of him.
Yeah, I mean, and I can agree with you. I think that there's so much oversaturation of the character. He's in, what, about 15, 16 books?
Nah, about a million.
You know, it's like...
Even the books he's not appearing in, he'll be on the cover just for sales purposes.
Yeah, and so, I mean, as far as the X-Men, somebody following Wolverine, somebody following Cyclops, I mean, I don't understand why not follow Storm and let that be it.
I don't get it. I think that's been my main problem with X-Men under Matt Fraction and all the writers after. The total lack of respect for Storm and her status as an established leader. I'm not saying she's the best leader. I'm not saying that. I think Storm is a better leader. But the point is, she has led. And there should be, you know, at least a bunch of X-Men who acknowledge her as a leader, and even her asserting herself as a leader and putting herself forward to say, okay, this is another option. But just having her sit back while, you know, these two uber popular characters, you know, hash it out, it just seems ridiculous. And it's even, her portrayal in X-Men has been worse than everything that Hudlin did with her during his run. People complain that she was just a token wife. Well, trust me, people. If you are reading X-Men, she's now not a token wife. She's not a token woman. She's a token black.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that seems to be par for the course for all the books, team books. I think there's only one character that is leading a team, and that would be the whole Luke Cage. But once again, we can say tokenism, because it's like he's that one guy but the majority of the story is featuring the so-called villains that he is reforming.
Now, remember, he's also leading that new Avengers book that we no longer reading because it killed Dr. Voodoo. He's leading that as well.
Yeah. Him and his wife, Power Woman.
Woman. I thought she was Jewel, or that pink-haired chick that flies nowadays.
No,
I can't get her name right.
Yeah, she changed her name to Power Woman now.
But wait a minute, didn't he stop using the Power Man monarchy? So shouldn't she be?
Yeah.
Cage.
Yeah, they made it. Yeah, they made it where she's Power Woman.
Oh God.
Now.
Thank God I'm not reading that crap anymore.
I think I wanted to put it out there for people who think that we may be being petty. I don't think folks understand that, you know, as a reader, as an educated, informed reader, we would like to see ourselves portrayed in a certain light also. I mean, you know, we understand if there's a whole... The heroes go through this and they go through that. We're just saying that if you have characters and they have powers, power sets, whatnot, why can't they get fleshed out like other characters get fleshed out? I think that's...
We're just asking for equality across the board.
Right.
Black character, white character, Asian, gypsy, doesn't matter. As long as there's a level playing field, we're good. The problem here is that there is not a level, especially in modern Marvel.
Well, I think in general across the board there's not any level playing field as far as can we get more than one, and if we get two, who are we expecting to stop? I mean, I remember the Civil War when Bill Foster. Black Goliath. He was killed. I didn't want to talk about it, but I have to talk about it. In that whole X-Men, this latest X-Men movie, great movie, but Darwin dies, and he was potentially the most powerful character. He dies first and easy, and I still am stuck on the fact that the female black character who went with the neo-Nazi bad guy, you know, is just little things like that. See, we know those things wouldn't happen in real life. You know, I'm not siding with the neo-Nazi. it is inconceivable, and we're talking about you're siding with the neo-Nazi in the 60s, really?
Don't forget, she's siding with him. She's still going off with him after he kills the black dude who was trying to save her.
Right. Who was her friend?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, you know, sorry, Blackie, you're dead. I'm a pretty chick. I got light skin. I'm going with his ass.
Right. I'm going to go with the neo-Nazi and the dude that looks like a demon. All right. I'm sorry. And if people can't see why we'd be upset behind that, then... There's something wrong with you, and you need some new glasses. A LASIK surgery or something.
The portrayal of Heimdall in Thor by Idris Elba.
It was all right. I think it was spot on.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I just think Thor is the best superhero movie this year.
Oh, it's not even close. I mean, the people who are complaining about it, I mean, most of the complaints, quite frankly, were that, oh, Hemdahl was black.
Yep, that was the main complaint.
Yeah, that was the only complaint. Other than that, the movie was spot on, and it, quite frankly, it fit the comic book origin to a T. I don't know how, what better they could have done in that movie.
And what did you think of the black characters in that green movie?
the green movie, as that's you call it. I mean, besides the
that's all.
I mean, he had the rave strobe light costume. that was pretty much it. His costume was shining and bright and flashing. Yay.
That movie was just, I think it was just weak, in all honesty. I think it was weak from start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, and it had the potential to do good. They introduced some good stuff, but they left it hanging. I mean, you have the Amanda Waller. You could have shown this is the reason why she created the organization that she created. You know, because of the aliens trying to take over Earth. I mean, it was all there to be thrown out there, but they chose the corny route.
And what did you think about the fact that they cut all of the scenes with Jon Stewart out for the movie? Well, not all the scenes, because he was supposed to have one scene.
Well, you know me, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I thought that they brought Hal Jordan back from the first place, so they wouldn't have to do Jon Stewart, the Green Lantern. I mean, Hal Jordan was dead. Everybody was happy. Nobody was missing Hal Jordan. I mean,
I swear Hal wasn't. I don't like that dude.
was there a clamoring for Hal Jordan to come back?
Apparently there was.
I guess. But
apparently.
The conspiracy theorist in me believes that the clamoring came from executives who didn't want to portray willpower in the hands of a black man. That's just me. That's my opinion.
Here's the thing. If Hal didn't come back, with chances are we wouldn't have a Green Lantern.
And that's a shame, because I think that the Jon Stewart character was the one that resonated with the young kids who followed Justice League Unlimited. I mean, he was a prominent character, and it was a great series, great story by the late, great Dwayne McDuffie. And everyone followed it, and it wouldn't have went over bad. If you would have had Jon Stewart as the Green Lantern, you would have got an actress, Idris Elba or Common or someone of that ilk as Green Lantern. It wouldn't have.
Fanboys would have eaten that movie alive.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they're regurgitating it as we speak. I had the chance to see it with my main man, Jamil Hemphill of National Press Comics, and we were sitting there after it was over, that's it?
Yep, all that fuss, all that publicity, and that was it.
Yeah.
When it ended for me, so I was like, seriously, this is it. I spent my money for this.
Yeah, so we've got one more book left. Well, one more movie left. That's the Captain America movie coming up here in a minute. I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
I'm looking forward more to Harry Potter than Captain America.
Yeah, I know. Well, finally, I mean, Harry Potter has been going on forever.
Yep.
I'm reading that Harry Potter. Yeah, I'm just reading that Harry Potter has a drinking problem. I'm like, wow, he was a little kid. Now he's a grown ass man that's in AA. That is funny within itself. So, finally, it'll be over with this weekend. We don't have to talk about Harry Potter any longer, because Harry Potter was starting to go the way of Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. Right. Oh, there's another one.
It's not bad.
What I'm saying is, I mean, what? This is like the eighth or ninth movie, right?
Yeah, because, you know, there are a lot of books.
Yeah.
Right? They're stretching the last book into, you know, two
parts. Yeah, they stretched it into two parts. Like, they didn't have to.
Of course they did. Think about it. The money is about to come. Well, all that money is about to come to a close. What do? Instead of having one movie, you split it into two.
Okay. Well, I mean, money-wise, I understand it.
Was one movie, and you know, you just chopped it into two and charged two ticket prices instead of one.
I agree. I understand that. And know that, yeah, there's money involved. But as a fan, it's tiring. I was in it, you know, the whole society of mysticism. And you got a protagonist that wants to take over the magic world. I was there. And then it kept going and going. And I'm like, can we get a resolution? I need resolution.
Yeah, you should play that song. Play the Aaliyah. Yeah.
I need some resolution. Sorry. I can't go on forever. You know, solve it. Move on to another chapter.
The big question with the Harry Potter series, though, is what happened to the actors once the series ends? Because, you know, a lot of people, you have this one big franchise, and you're remembered for simply that, and then you either don't get any good roles afterwards, or you just languish into.
All I can say is I hope they save their money. I mean, you know, the whole Harry Potter guy, nobody's going to see him as anything but Harry Potter. So,
yep.
I mean, if he got paid a nice chunk of change, so...
Didn't he do this Broadway thing in recent years? This naked thing? He was naked sometime on Broadway, I believe.
Yeah, if he was naked, I'm glad I missed that. So, you know, that's not inspiring me to do the Google search. You said naked, I'm like, well, not letting that one out.
No, it's just that when you said people only remember him as Harry Potter, I was thinking to myself, okay, what else could this dude do? And then I remembered, wait a minute, the media had this big uproar, I think it was a couple of years ago, over the fact that he was on Broadway and he was naked. And I was like, okay, why is this important? Why is this newsworthy?
Yeah.
If I was naked outside, it wouldn't make the news.
Right. Well, I mean, but that's the point. You know, these dudes, they release sex tapes and all this other stuff. People even write books about, you know, having sex with, quote-unquote, famous people. And that's supposedly news. I don't see it. I've never seen it. You would never understand the phenomenon. Like, oh, yeah, like the whole superhead phenomenon. Yeah, she has sex. Okay.
That girl is brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I ain't hating on her game. I'm just saying I don't understand the people who paid money to hear about somebody having sex with somebody.
A bunch of women. It's a bunch of women. They're expecting to get all the details about all the people who they'll never get to sleep with.
That's true.
What's more shocking to me about Superhead's books is that they're all New York Times best-selling novels. It's like, are you kidding me?
Well, I don't know. I mean, because we're saying that, and I'm not saying this in a bad way. Black folks don't read on that level. So, I mean, who are buying these books?
As I said, the women who simply want to live out their fantasy of knowing all the details of sex with famous men, that they'll never get a chance to sleep with.
Yeah, but see, a lot of times they do that anyway. We call them groupies and hanging out. I mean, it's one of those things, and that's why I was talking about the whole Black Panther phenomenon. I think that was an aspect that just has never been touched on that should be touched on, the groupie issue. I mean, as we know, famous men, you don't even have, you could be a fake celebrity and
yep.
get a lot of love.
That's true.
You know, so, I mean, so you think about it, a real life celebrity, I mean, it's getting thrown at you all the time. And these women who are buying the book, I think they just, and not stereotype everybody who bought. I'm saying a lot of them look at it as an instruction manual on how I can be super head too. But
Wait a minute. I think she actually wrote a manual. She has a book. The title of the book, I think, is How to Catch the Man and How to Keep Him. Some shit like that. How to catch the man of your dreams and keep him, I think.
as a man, it's not really that hard. I mean, we could do two sentences. if we're eating well and you're treating us well, we don't have to argue all day, and the sex is good, and we can have meaningful conversations without them ending in fuck you.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's really simple. We should write for Cosmopolitan, man. I see that stuff, and I just laugh like, no, men are not that complicated. Never have been, never will be.
Trust me, we're so simple that these women do not believe.
Yes, I mean,
the moment you meet someone like Karen Stephens, you know, telling you how to find and keep the man you want, I think you need help. You probably need to go to a psychiatrist.
Well, I mean, but that's the whole point. I mean, because Superhead, she had all the guys' attention. We just looked at the cover like, Superhead, yeah.
What I find even funnier than that is the fact that Superhead ain't got no man. She's been with, like, everybody in Hollywood, but she ain't got a man for herself, and yet she's writing books to tell women how to keep their man. Are you high? Or are you going to tell me how to keep a man you don't got a man?
Well, hold on. She's got men. She's into polyamory.
You know what? Let's get back on topic.
Well, getting on topic, we run out of time here. I want to thank you, man, for coming on. Tell the people real quick where we can find Ryan Frazier if we're looking to find something about Black superheroes.
Okay, guys, you can find Ryan Frazier at worldofblackheroes.com. That's worldofblackheroes.com, people. You can get your sales figures. You can get your reviews, your previews, your classic biographies, the whole shebang.
Yes. And also, if you go to my Smooth Drama page, if you happen to be there on our featured guest, there's a link that takes you there also. So, on that note, I want to thank you, man. It's been a pleasure as always, and we definitely got to do this again.
Definitely.
All right, man. Well, you take care, and I'll be talking to you.
Okay, Dick, no problem. Next time, guys.
All right, man. Peace.
Peace.
All right, and on that note, I'm Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-Word. This has been a special smooth drama. We out.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth.
Drama.